This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by our live commercial-free debate coverage starting at 6 p.m. on Thursday. Final debate between President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden, followed immediately by some live analysis. Don't forget to tune in. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home, so let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Back the blue.
If you combine the exit interviews of the 118 cops who separated from the SPD this year, a historic number of separations, it would all in be the size of a decent novel. You have over 175 pages of exit interviews where cops are telling us why they decided to leave the department that they loved. None of what you read in these exit interviews, none of what you read would you consider shocking. In fact, they say a lot of the things we've said on this show about the city of Seattle. The only difference, of course, they're doing it from this perspective of a cop who has to deal with a Seattle City Council that doesn't merely stay silent when they are attacked, when these officers are literally attacked on city streets. Some of them defend the violence or the threats. For example, one cop wrote, "I refuse to work for the Socialist City Council and their political agenda. This agenda sacrifices the health and well-being of the officers and ultimately will destroy the fabric of this once fine city. This is an officer who has worked for the SPD for over 20 years. This is a 20-plus year veteran of the force saying this council is going to destroy the very fabric of this city. That he's been here for 20 years indicates this is not just some conservative who got the wrong idea about the city of Seattle. He has been there for two decades as the city has fallen into the grip of ideologues. So blinded by their political agenda, they don't realize exactly what it's like. Not just policing in Seattle, but simply living in Seattle." Another officer who, after 31 years on the job, decided that he didn't want to risk his pension or his health and well-being any longer, separated, retired, said, "City politics also is non-supportive and at times hostile toward officers." That's, of course, an understatement. Another outgoing officer said, "It's an unwinnable battle with the city council. It will be the downfall of the city of Seattle." These are not outlier comments, right? This isn't just one or two or three officers. These are 118 cops who decided to leave the force, many of them either retiring early or just going to another department in another city, and they're all virtually saying the same thing. Here's another. "The city's morals do not match my own." Presumably, people become cops because they care deeply about their community and what it must feel like to police a city you love, only to be hated by those in charge, is something that I can't quite myself understand. These cops are leaving at a time where we've got an increase in the homicide rate. More homicides have been committed this year than in any year since at least 2008. And we are going to continue to lose police officers. Chief Adrian Diaz, who's going to be on this show at 3:30, told this to King 5.
"We are right now at this point just trying to maintain every officer that we've got. And I think that we will, at that point, by the end of the year, it won't be about layoffs. It'll be just about people just deciding to separate from the department.
What do you think is going to happen to the city of Seattle when that happens, when more cops go? Because the thinking is that number's going to get to 200. Right now, we have, I believe it's 1,203, quote-unquote, deployable officers. It's a misleading number. It's actually much less than 1,203. But that number is about 70 fewer than what we had in 1990. Our population in Seattle has grown by 40%. I believe it's actually 44% since 1990. And we have fewer officers now than we did back then. Are you shocked that homicides are going up? Are you shocked that arsons are going up? Are you shocked that knife homicides are going up? Now, if you're a council member, you're probably looking at this and saying, yeah, they don't mind this response. Some have taken the position. Lisa Herbold, I believe, said this yesterday. If you don't want to police in this city under these new rules, go somewhere else. Good riddance, she essentially says. But there are real-world consequences here. Mike Solon, speaking to Cairo 7 TV, he is the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, had this to say.
Deflating. I'm seeing was what I still believe is a great department being torn apart by politics.
And that's really what this is about, politics. You're not getting any policy prescriptions coming from the council unless they are dipped in politics. Covered, dripping in some pretty dangerous political positions. When you take a position that you want to defund the police or abolish the police, get to that point, that is dangerous, and Mike Solon understands that.
When you immerse politics into public safety, you sacrifice human beings, the good men and women that do the job of policing. They're going to leave.
Do you get the sense that this council cares? Seriously, do you get the sense that this council cares that these police officers are going to leave? Because they don't care now, it doesn't seem like, that they have left. Have you seen any commentary coming from anyone? Seriously, have you seen any statement coming from any council member about these numbers? Expressing alarm. No, what are they doing today? They started conversations about now cutting an additional $50 million from the SPD budget. The money is coming from reducing patrols. The patrols that we so desperately need. On top of that, salary reductions. They are actively trying to push police officers out of the city and bring activists in. Do you think it's lost on anyone that the city of Seattle offered a six-figure contract to a former pimp while pushing all of these cops out of the city? You push the cops out, you bring activists in. And as a result, all you're going to see is an increase in crime. The proposal that they have on the table that they're talking about today does, in fact, bring on one new job. So I suppose that's a positive. They're going to hire one person, although it's not going to be a cop. It's going to be a full-time Office of Police Accountability Investigations supervisor. So they're bringing in someone to go after cops. That's who they're hiring. Although at this rate, as officers keep leaving, I don't know if there's going to be that many investigations to supervise into the conduct of police officers. Walk around Seattle and see how bad the homelessness crisis has gotten. Because if you don't think that it could get worse than what it was before the pandemic, literally walk Ballard for 5 minutes. Or Capitol Hill, or Pioneer Square, or Soto. Though don't go at night, because it's incredibly sketchy there. Things are going to get worse. And I hope this shines a renewed spotlight on that ballot that's on your kitchen table. Not because Seattle issues are being discussed in this upcoming election, but because we know what these kinds of ideologues can do to a city, to a region, to a state. And you do have some legislative campaigns that you guys need to be a lot more aware of. State Senator Ron Muzzle, for example, is running in the 10th Legislative District. He's going to be stopping by on that campaign at 5:45. In a moment, though, we're going to check in with the Tacoma County Council and a race between two Republicans. One of those Republicans is going to join us. Find me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRants. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Pierce County?
Two Republicans go head-to-head on the Pierce County Council District Number 3 race. District Number 3 encompasses Eatonville and Graham, Roy and Spanaway, and so much more. One of the candidates is Joe Zeichkin, and he joins me now. Joe, welcome to the show. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
So take us through just big picture first. What is your plan on the Pierce County Council, as it kind of appears that it's leaning pretty far into the left territory?
Well, my plan, I think, is I was just reading an article about this, actually, too, is to try to improve the infrastructure as far as the roads north and south. I think we have a big problem with that. We have like three major arterials, and they're trying to, I'm not sure if you're aware of this project they're trying to put in there, but it's going to add 93,000 people over the next 10 or 15 years. And it's going to really affect the roads. We still need some more transit out there, which is another completely different issue. And yeah, so there's a lot to go on there in the council.
There obviously is, and especially when you would represent a district like number 3, it's not as densely populated. There's a lot of land, but there's also a lot of room for potential growth. And I imagine when you look at places from McKenna to Ashford, you probably see some opportunities, but you also don't want to sort of ruin the identity of the district.
Yeah, it's a pretty rural district, but if you look at the map of District 3, it kind of comes to a, at the north end, it kind of comes to a funnel, and it all funnels down to either Highway 7, which is Pacific Avenue or Mountain Highway, or 161, which is Meridian, or even they have 162 down the Orange Valley, and then in the middle of that you have Canyon, that and that's your major arterials north and south for anybody that lives south of 176. So, you know, they never did finish the Cross Pierce Highway. That would alleviate a lot of traffic. So I think that the infrastructure is just a huge deal out here. By them putting up a whole row of high-density apartments, I think it's going to slow things down a little bit.
So let's talk about some of the bigger picture issues. The Tacoma City Council, for example, is tackling policing like so many other cities in Pierce County, and they're looking at police chief, and you know they're looking to perhaps redefine what policing ought to look like. You've got similar issues in the past popping up in Puyallup as it relates to policing and the homeless crisis, and obviously you're not only going to be weighing in on decisions that impact District Number 3 on the Pierce County Council. What role do you see policing take in Pierce County as we kind of go through the debate on sort of life post George Floyd?
Well, I'm in full support of the police department, especially the sheriffs out here. I think they, you know, the number that are out here, I think they do a great job. I would be supportive. I mean, I think there's 28 or there were 28 open positions that were authorized out here in Pierce County. They're just having a problem getting people hired for some reason. Well, I mean, obvious reasons probably that, you know, it's kind of frowned on. You know, my own son just got on the Federal Way Police Department, so nice. I'm pretty proud of that. But yeah, I'm all for giving the police the tools that they need to do the job right. I mean, maybe they guess they need a little more training on some issues, but I think it's more, I think people are looking for more police out here. They were stretched pretty thin in the police department out here, believe it or not. I mean, there's like two or three deputies covering, you know, 75 square miles sometimes, and it's just not enough, so.
Do you generally speaking, do you think the Pierce County Sheriff is operating in a way that the department ought to? And should the budget be protected from moves that are potentially similar to what's going on in King County, where they're looking to defund?
oh yeah, I think we should protect the budget for the sheriffs and the prosecutors and all that. I mean, I think we need to. I think it shows if you take a firm stand against crime and you know, and be fair about things. I don't think it's going to be an issue. I think that yeah, the police need all the support we can give them, but I don't see Pierce County having big issues with things, you know. I mean, I think there was a story yesterday, and I'm trying to find it, and it was on the radio, and I can't really find any links to it. So, but other than that, I think the department does a pretty good job. We just need more officers to fill those vacant positions.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Joe Zeichkin. He is running for the Pierce County Council, District Number 3. This encompasses everything from Eatonville to McKenna, Hearts Lake to Graham, Spanaway to Ashford. His website is Joe Z for District 3. Joe Z for FOR District and then the number 3.com. Joe Z for District 3.com. Before we let you go, if you could also talk a little bit about what your plans are, not only to make the county even more business friendly, as sort of King County, thanks to Seattle mismanagement, is leaking a lot of businesses and employees. What specifically can be done for the more rural areas of this district and of Pierce County in general? Because obviously, when we're talking about business needs, they're not all the same.
Yeah, they're not all the same. And there's a lot of different things we could talk about. We could talk about tourism, but I think my big focus is going to be Fredericton. I think that that is a huge opportunity for District 3 and Pierce County in general to grow from manufacturing and distribution. They're punching that Canyon Road corridor down through to the port, down to the freeway. So we're going to have a lot of I think they're calling it some kind of employment corridor or something like that, where they want to keep it mostly, light industrial and stuff. But I think when you get out to Fredericton, there is just a huge opportunity there to make a, like, camp when it was in its heyday growing, you know, just warehouses and manufacturing and distribution and jobs where people don't have to drive from, you know, Graham to Auburn or Kent to work. And I think that's a huge thing right there.
Again, we've been talking with Joe Zeichkin, excuse me. He is website Joe Z for District3.com. Joe, the letter Z, F-O-R, Joe Z for District number 3.com. So just put out the 3, but the 4 is F-O-R. Hopefully people are not confused.
To
learn more about Joe's campaign, he's one of the Republicans up for the 3rd District of the Pierce County Council. You're running up against another Republican, Amy Kruver, who we've reached out to give equal time. So we hope that, of course, if you're interested in learning more about Joe's campaign, you can go to the website. Joe, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for the time. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, the interim chief of the Seattle Police Department, Adrian Diaz, he's going to stop by on a day where the city council in Seattle is looking to start the conversation about defunding to the tune of $50 million more coming from the budget. This, of course, happens at a time where we are losing Seattle police officers at unprecedented levels. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Today, the Seattle City Council starts their conversations about further defunding the police department. Now on the line, almost $50 million in budget cuts and the money coming from reducing patrols. This, of course, happens at a time where the city of Seattle is losing a historic number of police officers, and the crime rate, particularly homicide, is at its highest rate it's been since, I believe, 2008. Joining me on the line with his reaction and his plan is the interim chief of police for the SPD, Adrian Diaz. Chief Diaz, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, obviously you're coming off of a news cycle in which the highlight has been 118 officers all in at a minimum have separated from the police department. I have to imagine, as much as that's a disappointment, you going through the exit interviews, you can't be shocked, right?
No, you know, I understand some of the officers. I've actually been in a lot of conversation with many of the officers. Obviously, I'm trying to do everything we can to keep all of our officers. We train them well. They're doing excellent work day in and day out. They're, you know, arresting people that have got guns. They've arrested, you know, homicide. Our clearance rate of our homicide is at, you know, a high of over 70%. I mean, so they're doing the work. And so I got to have to make sure that I have the right personnel as I enter into 2021 that's able to keep this city safe.
As of right now, do you have confidence that you have the personnel numbers at a little over 1,200? I think it's 1,203, quote-unquote, deployable officers, which I think that's actually probably a little bit high depending on how you're defining deployable. But do you think that number is enough to keep Seattle safe?
No. You know, and I've come out, even when I was pushing out our budget for next year with the city council, I was explaining that, you know, the need for us to have people in that are going through the academy, that are going through your FTO phase, and then, you know, being able to deploy them out. Also, you know, so you have people that are also out that are sick or on extended leave. And so you have to have close to about 1,400 to then have a reasonable number, which is it puts us to about 1,250 that are deployable. 1,250 is about 1,275. So you really need about 1,400 people to have a much more reasonable staffing when it comes to having enough staffing to patrol, investigations, and special operations.
Is it safe to say that the number of homicides that we've seen right now and a lot of the criminal activity that we're seeing sort of flourish is a consequence of the low staffing numbers, or do you think there's something else at play?
You know, I think this year in relation to COVID is obviously, to me, is an anomaly year. I mean, it's not that all of our homicides are related to gun violence. You know, it's about 60% of our homicides are actually gun violence homicides. We've had homicides related to arson. Mm-hmm. We've had homicides related to traffic vehicular homicides, so vehicle collisions where one was a stolen vehicle, et cetera. So we have a lot of homicides related to the usage of a knife. And so we're trying to track all aspects of it to see, you know, what correlation there is. Is it related to, you know, domestic violence? Is it related to homelessness? And so these are all things that we're trying to pay attention to. When you do see low staffing numbers, it does impact our ability to be visible, to go out and prevent a lot of the homicides from occurring. And so, yeah, we need to make sure that we are adequately staffed to prevent some of this crime from happening.
Just joining us, we're talking with SPD Chief Adrian Diaz about the exodus of officers from the department, but also at the same time, the Seattle City Council moving forward to cut an additional potentially $50 million from the budget, which of course means not just you're losing officers, but a part of this, apparently, according to King 5, is salary reductions for some sworn employees and civilian employees. The politics of all of this is undeniable. So how do you move forward in that world in which the politics are driving this and not necessarily public safety concerns?
You know, our big piece is just trying to make sure that we educate everyone involved. We educate, you know, the city council about what our needs are for making sure and maintaining public safety throughout the city of Seattle, that we educate the community about the experiences that our officers are having to go through. You know, I also need officers that we can routinely kind of rotate out. When you have officers that have had to deal with demonstrations nightly, on a nightly basis, with very little time off, that's one of the reasons why I put, you know, officers back into patrol, that we created a community response group that created 100 officers to be able to respond to not only demonstrations, but also take some of the call load. Last night, they ended up, you know, responding to close to about 40 different calls for service. throughout the city. So having that, having the ability for officers to have a little bit of rest and to take some either some time off or not handle as many calls for service every single day, that is the level of wellness that we have to have for our officers. And so we just have to make sure people are aware of that, you know, and the community is aware, that our city council is aware, that this is a difficult job. And, you know, the more stress we put on those officers, it can create some adverse effects. And so we try to have to make sure that we're taking care of our personnel.
Well, there are some direct adverse effects that we can talk about. I know yesterday during a press conference, you made note of the rise in the criminal activism, where people are not protesting, nor are they peacefully assembling. Their intent seems pretty clear to do harm to officers. You had the incident with Jacob Greenberg, who is accused of now in charge with assault one and a baseball bat attack to the head of an officer on Saturday night. You had an officer during sort of this melee as they were trying to arrest criminals that he ends up breaking his elbow. I mean, how much of this is on the politicians to speak up and push back? Because there's total silence from this council and frankly, from this mayor in some cases when it comes to these kinds of attacks.
You know, I know the mayor has reached out to both of the officers impacted by this type of violence. You know, we have, you know, I feel like we are trying to do everything we can to ensure that our officers are taken care of and that they're safe. And I try not to, you know, get really deep into the level of politics of whether it's denouncing. I know as the chief of police, I have to make sure that my officers are safe. And, you know, I have to make sure that I, you know, go out and publicly and denounce it. And honestly, a couple weeks ago when I came out on a Sunday to denounce it, our crowds have greatly diminished. However, they're still happening. And you know, I would love for us to just focus on police work. I would love for us to just, you know, be able to drive down the shots fired calls, to be able to recover more guns off the street. I would love for us to, you know, drive the homicide, you know, rate down. And, you know, if we're handling, you know, nightly demonstrations that are not going out and trying to be peaceful, And I have no problem with peaceful protests, and I have no problem pushing out for the rightful cause. But, you know, I need to make sure our personnel are going out and doing, you know, addressing crime and making sure that the city is safe. And that's the stuff that I have to make sure that I denounce and make sure that our personnel are in the right place.
Yeah, and talking to, you know, to the point of terrific police work, anyone can just look at the compilation of work that went into the Greenberg arrest with that detective. I mean, the work that was done and the evidence collected is tremendous. It's available right now, by the way, at ktth.com. Before we let you go, just on this idea of a new navigation team, in which the old one, which had officers alongside these embedded outreach workers, that's been cut. And now it's going to be replaced with a team of civilians who will not be doing any of the sweeps. The navigation team in the last quarter in which the data was collected had record numbers of positive results in getting people into shelters. Is there fear that without the ability to at least move the encampments, we're going to continue to see what we've seen in this city, which is just, you know, parks completely engulfed with homelessness?
I think we have to assess whether this will be something that is a viable option. I would love to think that people can get people off the streets, into services and connected, and we don't need police involved. So I would love to hope that's our driving goal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, after a couple of months, if that doesn't happen, I routinely get contacted from members of this community about the serious public health and public safety hazards that many of the encampments have created. And so, you know, people are looking for some level of relief, and I completely understand, you know, when you have tents that are sitting out in front of residential homes, and people are fearful for, you know, being able to walk outside their door. I completely understand where people are at. So I think with everything, we try this option out. We hopefully assess it, determine if it's effectiveness. If it's not being effective, then we have to then look at what are our alternatives to something that can work more robustly.
There you go. We've been talking with the chief of the Seattle Police, Adrian Diaz. Chief Diaz, thank you so much for stopping by. First time where I get to call you chief.
Thank you so much. You take good care.
You as well. You're listening to the Jason Rancho. If you want to weigh in on any of those issues, send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. Back to the Jason Ranch Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. As most of you know, I don't like to crow about things that I'm right about. I like to try to stay as humble as humanly possible, despite, you know, the usually brilliant and witty commentary that I provide 3 hours straight, Monday through Friday, from 3 to 6. I'm always hesitant to pat myself on the back, despite my track record of consistently calling stories the way that I've called them. And there is a reason, Producer Peyton, that they call me a certain nickname. What is said nickname?
Annoying?
No.
Obnoxious.
Not coworkers. What does the public call me?
I mean, a lot of people call you a bootlicker, but they call you Detective Rance.
Detective Rance. Why do they call me Detective Rance?
Because you solve a bunch of cases that real detectives don't care about.
A bunch of cases no one else cares about. And I solved one yesterday.
You did?
Remember Jeffrey Toobin? CNN legal analyst. He's a staff writer with The New Yorker. And he got caught in what was being presented simply as an accidental flashing of his nether region during a Zoom call. And I quickly pointed out, as all good detectives do, something just didn't feel right about his apology. To me, it seems a little weird to apologize to your wife if all that happened was you were naked, thinking you were off camera. So brilliant. I feel like if you're going to publicly apologize to your wife, maybe something else was being done in said Zoom call that you did not think people could see. And what was I implying that Jeffrey Toobin was doing? Let's just say he really loves himself.
I was going to say he was loving himself.
He just really loved himself. And apparently that's what actually was caught in the Zoom video. According to Vice, the folks on two separate Zoom calls were practicing an election simulation for their digital properties on election night. And they spoke over at Vice to a pair of individuals who were on the call under the condition of anonymity. And said it was unclear how much each individual person on the call saw, but both of the people we spoke to said they saw Toobin with himself. They say the two sources described a juncture in the election simulation when there was a strategy session and the Democrats and Republicans went into their respective breakout rooms for about 10 minutes. At this point, they said, it seemed like Toobin was on a second video call. The sources said that when the groups returned from their breakout rooms, Toobin lowered the camera. The people on the call said they could see Toobin touching his Toobin then left the call. Moments later, he called back in, seemingly unaware of what his colleagues had been able to see, and the simulation continued. For him, it was not a simulation. It was real life. The question then, of course, becomes, who was he on the other call with? And again, when I said it's very bizarre that he was apologizing to his wife, now my assumption is he was Zoom sexting or webcamming with someone else. That's my assumption. Don't know if it's true. It's obviously possible that he was on with his wife. I find this part inexcusable, that he did it in between Zoom sessions. yesterday I said, more speaking generally about, like, if you're doing a Zoom call from your home or your hotel room and you're still getting dressed, it's an early morning call and you think that your camera is off, and so you want to be able to participate, and maybe that's what could have happened in certain circumstances. That gets a little bit of a pass. You still get called out for being dopey enough to keep your camera on when it seems pretty obvious when your camera's on. But okay, fine. People make mistakes. This, trying to sneak one in during a 10-minute side session, gutsy, I'll give you. But inappropriate.
We've been in the pandemic for so long. Is this what he does in between all of his Zoom sessions? And also, second note, is this something he did before we went into the pandemic? Like, oh, got 10 minutes before a meeting, and he skirts off away into a dark corner?
I mean, someone should ask that of Brian Stelter. He should ask this question. Now, of course, he is on a leave of absence from CNN. And he has also been put on leave from The New Yorker as they do an investigation. Imagine that investigation.
I would hate to be one of those investigators.
Oh,
you have to go through the recorded film sessions.
I wonder. I can't imagine they recorded it.
They're all recorded.
They're not all recorded.
They record. Those are, you don't think Zoom is recording all of those? All of our information.
The back end from Zoom? Okay.
Yeah, all of our information goes somewhere.
The View talked about it. Sarah Haynes got all giggly.
I'm sorry. I usually give women a lot of credit for multitasking, but this is a gear switch I could leave to only a man. This was during an election simulation, which is the most, I'm sorry, the most unsexy thing I've ever heard of. And I'm not going to be able to unsee this. I very
she
much
didn't see
missed
anything.
The days when Jennifer went to the bathroom and forgot to turn off her camera.
Yes.
I'm so sorry. I know there's a lot of seriousness to this topic.
Well, I mean,
it's just really hard because I can't fathom a situation where this was the option A and B. So I'm petrified of my computer camera. I don't know if you remember, Whoopi, when you used to tell us, put something over that, put something over
turn
that.
It, yes,
I
yes.
take my cameras and my...
What is she doing on the in front of the laptop that she's terrified of?
Better than Jeffrey Toobin.
Apparently, that's not a really high bar to reach. Just don't do that when you're on a business call, you dumb. It's a Jason Rand.